Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Ad conditionem certam perveni, viris mias, in gravescente etate, non iam aptas esset monospitrinum eque administrandum.
Let's stay united. We love Benedict XVI. Jesus is in charge of the church. It's his church, and he's going to guide us through whatever happens.
The question that we need to fundamentally ask when we go to the scriptures is, where is this forgiving my sins? Where are the promises of God? How does this text set me to stand before the face of God?
I like to think of the blind beggar as the first Lutheran. He recognizes that he has nothing, nothing to offer Jesus. All he can do is receive from Jesus.
Injury do players in Iowa, love issues, etc.
Well, I think the news was surprising this morning of Pope Benedict's intention to retire, to resign from the office of the papacy at the end of this month, because that's just not a piece of news that most of us hear in our lifetimes. It is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime event for most people, and yet Pope Benedict XVI has, for his own reasons, decided that his time as the Pope should end with the end of this month. And of course, that raises a lot of questions about a predecessor or about a successor. It raises a lot of questions about what his legacy will be and how the Pope is selected. And this is unprecedented. Why this now? Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. James Hitchcock of St. Louis University joins us for the first few minutes of the program. We're going to talk about Pope Benedict's announced retirement later this month. Pastor Joseph Abrahamson will join us after that. We'll talk about the season of Lent and Ash Wednesday. Some Christians and some pagans say they are of pagan origin. Is that true? We'll answer that question. Then Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of GetReligion.org will be talking about media coverage of syncretism, that is, interreligious worship and prayer, especially as it occurs in the public square. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. James Hitchcock is a regular guest and a professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's been a while.
There will be, by historians, the inevitable comparison between Benedict XVI and his predecessor, John Paul II, a much longer tenure there. What do you think how they will be compared by history, these two men?
I think the emphasis will be really on continuity, that John Paul was a bishop at the Second Vatican Council. Benedict was a theologian at the council. They understood the council from the inside. They knew what it was all about. They knew where things had been done in the name of the council that were not legitimate. And I think they managed, to a great extent between them, to correct the course that the ship of the church was on. In especially part of that, of course, is cracking down on irregularities of one kind or another, but also conveying, I think, to the public an extremely positive understanding of what the authentic renewal of the church is all about.
This news, as I said before, kind of struck most people as something they'd never heard before. Many people simply assume that a pope is a pope for life. How often does it happen in history that the pope actually
resigns? Well, you said a lifetime. It would be many lifetimes. 1415 was the last time it happened. Prior to that, around 1300. And then a few cases in the early centuries, I think at most four or five. So we knew it could happen. But there had been reports or speculation from time to time that Benedict perhaps was considering it, but I have to say there were no leaks this time. Ordinarily things like this, some leak out a day or two ahead of time, but this seems to have been hermetically sealed.
I wonder about people can obviously ask why, and I think the Pope's statement has been, it's the burden of office, and I'm an old man, and I'm ready to hand this burden to someone else.
Yes, he more or less said that when he was elected. He said at that time, I was looking forward to spending my remaining years in writing. You know, he's a great theologian. And I presume that that was what it was all about. It's conceivable, of course, that he was told that he has some kind of medical disorder that if he does, maybe in due time it will become known. But he's probably conscious. There have been cases in the past where, notably Pope Leo XIII around 1900, lived to be quite old and apparently pretty well lost the control of the situation in his last years. And I imagine that something like that, you know, is let's get out while I still am in control. And not find myself in a situation where I can't even do anything.
So does a pope serve at his own pleasure? In other words, when he says, I'm done, he can be done anytime he wants to?
Yes, I think John Paul II laughed one time and said, if I were to resign, to whom would I submit my resignation? Whether a pope could ever be removed is a subject that has been discussed from time to time, and there's really no set procedure or any kind of agreement as to how exactly or why exactly something like that should be done. It was done again in 1415 when there were three rival claimants for the papal throne. Two of them voluntarily resigned, and then the third one was removed. But of course, the claim of the church was that the third one was not the legitimate pope anyway. So basically, yes, he's resigning to himself, I guess you would say.
How is a pope replaced?
How is he replaced?
Yes.
Well, there will be a consistory of the cardinals, which will be, I don't think he set a date for that, and then it is a two-thirds vote there's a complicated procedure. It starts out as a two-thirds vote, then it gets less as time goes on, and the cardinals are basically locked up in a palace and in the Vatican until they arrive at a decision. In modern times, these have been very brief, a matter of a few days. You could go back into earlier times, and sometimes they went on for months. And I would imagine that this will be a reasonably quick consistory, as they're called.
When I heard the news, and tell me if I'm just dead wrong, when I heard the news this morning, I told my wife, well, I don't think Benedict is simply resigning and leaving it to a luck of the draw. I think he's probably already, if not decided, but he has already made quite clear what he hopes a successor to him will be.
I suspect he has not mentioned any names. It's pretty clear, of course, if you want to say what his agenda is. And where he has had the biggest influence is in he's appointed so many of the cardinals who will be doing the voting, and therefore could be expected. That's, I think, was one of his strengths, certainly judging by the United States. I think he, by and large, appointed bishops of very good quality and bishops who were very alert to problems and prepared to deal with those problems. And then some of those same people, of course, being elevated to the College of Cardinals. I think it might be counterproductive if a pope seemed to be saying, here, I want so-and-so to be my successor.
Now, I wonder, many people take this opportunity to ask questions like, well, is this going to signal a new direction? Could we get, say, an entire, rather than continuity with John Paul II and Benedict XVI, could we get a radical new direction toward a more liberal view of women in the church or the social issues? What do you think the chances of that?
That is a possibility, although I'm inclined to think it won't happen. The doctrine of the Catholic Church would be, first of all, that you couldn't get a liberal pope who would, for example, come in and say abortion is morally right, because that's considered absolutely definitive teaching. John Paul II stated pretty well definitively, women cannot be ordained. I think that's, again, pretty well a closed question. It would tend to be a matter of emphasis. What would the pope overlook? What would he stress in his, you mentioned social justice. The two don't have to be incompatible, but sometimes they are. As we see, for example, in recent American politics, do you support the welfare state idea of the Democrats, or do you support some of the social conservative Republicans? It would be a matter of emphasis, or rather a matter of tone, rather than anything dramatic. But I'm inclined to think that the next pope will be someone in the line of Benedict.
How, we'll talk a little bit more about this on the other side of the break, but get us started here. What do you think, even though he's had a rather short term, what do you think his major accomplishments have been while pope?
Well, as I said, I think that he's done a very good job in appointing bishops. Some outstanding men have emerged, and not just in the United States, but elsewhere as well. That was something where I think John Paul II was sometimes a little bit deficient, that he got the impression sometimes that he wasn't paying a whole lot of attention and he was rubber-stamping nominations that came across his desk. But Benedict has a remarkable ability, I think, to articulate the teachings of the Church in terms that can be understood by modern people. Now, sometimes that has brought criticism, of course, because he has a very good understanding of modern culture and what in modern culture is good and should be encouraged and what must be condemned. And he's had no hesitation about doing that. He's the greatest theologian who's ever been pope. And he follows the greatest philosopher who's ever been pope. So we've had a remarkably high intellectual level since 1978.
So when you're not only speaking of his theological pedigree, you're talking about his ability to articulate Catholic teaching.
Yes, exactly. His writings, I think, are extremely clear. He's won the respect of many Protestants. I've heard people say that his book, Introduction to Christianity, Protestants who say that they like that book very much. He came out before he was pope, issuing this document, Dominus Jesus, which was a firm restatement of the central importance of Jesus Christ in redemption, and that brought him, you know, a lot of criticism from liberal Protestants who said, "Well, you're moved." Well, Catholics too, for that matter. Wanted to be more ecumenical.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, a few more minutes with Dr. James Hitchcock on the Pope's resignation. He's professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the 2013 International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights in Strasbourg, France.
Specialized training in evangelism, because the problem that we generally have in presenting the gospel to people who are not believers is that we are frightened witless that they're going to ask us questions or criticize our position. The 2 weeks in France with top apologists gives those people who are registered for the program contact with the major arguments of unbelief in our time and the very best answers. And that means that one gets the ammunition one needs for effective evangelism. So this is an opportunity that you really shouldn't miss.
You can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 9th through the 20th in Strasbourg, France, at apologeticsacademy.eu.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
You believe that there's not one error in the Bible. That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the logo for the Issues Etc. Journal and Weekly Bulletin insert at issuesetc.org and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org, look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo, and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. James Hitchcock is our guest from St. Louis University. We're talking about the Pope Benedict's announcement that he will resign later this month. I got a couple of quick questions for you. Are there likely successors? I know that when John Paul died, Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, was at the top of a very short list, and a lot of people just considered that inevitability. Does he have any likely successors?
Well, a list is beginning to emerge. Cardinal Scola, the Archbishop of Venice, would be a logical choice. He's kind of in the same intellectual tradition as John Paul and Benedict. He's an outstanding theologian. He would certainly mark the continuation of Benedict's policies. Canadian in the Vatican, Cardinal Wayette, would be another good example in that same mold. It's quite possible that they will go outside Europe. There have been mentions of Africans. Cardinal Peter Turkson of Ghana has come up. I don't know too much about him. Possibly Latin America. Generally speaking, the Latin American prelates are not terribly well known in other places, but it was rumored that one of them was a close contender the last time around. So it's a question of, it would be quite natural to go outside of Europe to look for a pope. But will they do it this time? I really don't know. I guess if I were taking a bet, I would bet on Cardinal Scola. And I would like him to be elected, if only because I've met him. And I could say I've met the last three popes.
Does he coronate his successor since he is... I mean, usually the previous pope is dead. Does he coronate his successor?
I don't think so. I don't believe there is a formal coronation ceremony anymore. There used to be, but I think that was abolished some years back. So would he be there? That would be an interesting question. Would he attend the ceremony of installation? The word I've seen so far is he's going to live in a cloistered convent in the Vatican. So would he? I would guess that he would tend to avoid public appearances lest he be seen as attracting attention away from his successor.
What does he likely do, if not go on CNN and comment on things? What does he likely do for the remainder of his days?
I think he's got a whole agenda of theological writing. He has continued to come out with books even while he's pope. He's had a series on Jesus of Nazareth. He's had a series on various saints of the church. I'm sure that he feels like he's got enough writing to last him for the rest of his life. And leave. He may have even thought that that was a better legacy to leave the church than what he could do as its governor.
Then, I guess, finally, if you had to kind of sum up what it is his short years have been, how would you summarize them in just one sentence, Dr. Hitchcock?
I think it's been very encouraging. I think it's been a great combination of the discipline of disorder and at the same time the encouragement of positive movements as a substitute for disorder. I think he's been very good at doing that. I think we'll be experiencing the fruits of that for a long time to come.
Dr. James Hitchcock is professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.